I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Time to take KSL Outdoors. This is Utah's most listened to program about hunting, fishing, camping, and high adventure. All the gear you need to buy, where the fish are biting, and secret places in Utah and around the world where you can have a blast. KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Hey, good morning, and welcome back for hour number two of KSL Outdoors Radio. Tim Hughes, along with Nav Adamskis, the dancer, and yes, we're talking the Cisco Disco this morning.
I'm going to have to suffer my rhythm in the studio here, Tim, when you play this. We hit a disco ball.
Well, I'm looking at one on YouTube here as they play this, but you told me when we were on the mountain last week that you would have outdanced Travolta back in the day.
I'm not exaggerating either. We went to see some good dancing. We saw mediocre dancing. We needed to school that boy.
And that you were going to throw down against him.
Yeah.
Here we go. Hang on. Actually, it's probably better people can't see this. I'm the one that's having to endure. Nice to have you listening as we begin the second and final hour here for another week. Tim Hughes and Mike Navadovskis here. We are joined by Scott Tolentino, an aquatic biologist for the Division of Wildlife Resources. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
How are you?
We are looking forward to talking some Cisco Disco here. Navi was expounding a minute ago on the ecosystem of Bear Lake in preparation for this conversation. But this has really become sort of a rite of passage for some people. It's more about the fun than it is the fish, isn't it?
It is. It's a good way to get out in the middle of the winter and get out of cabins and get the cabin fever off your chest and have some fun. I mean, people look forward to this every year, and we're looking forward to having people up here in another week or so.
Walk people through the process of what actually takes place here, because you're not fishing with fishing line and rod and reel, right?
Well, yes and no. It just depends on what you want to do. But the actual Cisco Disco that we have over at Cisco Beach, the Cisco are small fish. They come in along the shoreline in January to spawn, and they come right in next to the shoreline in anywhere from about 2 or 3 inches of water out to maybe 3 or 4 feet of water. Anglers are able to use handheld dip nets to take these fish, and so it's pretty exciting. You could see literally hundreds, if not thousands, of fish swimming along the shoreline. Anglers come up and just have a wonderful time.
And the event itself, I mean, obviously the fish are not waiting until your planned event to do their thing, but your planned event does take place on one particular day.
It does. And so, anyways, typically the Cisco will come in to spawn, and it depends. It has a lot of factors on when they come in, but most of the time they're usually, I always tell people, January 20th plus or minus a couple of days on either side. And on a year with open water like we're having right now, and it doesn't appear that it might freeze before the Cisco actually run, they typically come in a bit later on an open year. So I'm guessing, you know, from the 20th maybe to the 25th would be the start of the run, and then they go for about 10 days or so. And so that's where we're looking at. We try to set our little get together at Cisco Beach when we think they're going to run, and we're kind of gaming on it for January 25th on a Saturday.
All right. And as you mentioned, people come just to have fun. There's music out there. People are cooking them right there. You almost eat these like sardines, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of people show up. Some people have never been there. They don't know what to do with them, but they're pretty easy to cook and clean, and so people enjoy them. And the only way to eat them is fresh. And so simple, you catch them. You could use a pair of scissors to clean them. All you do is snip the head off, open them up, gut them out, rinse them off, and then drop them in some dry breading mix, and then drop them in hot oil. You end up eating the whole fish, bones and all. It all cooks up. They're small, and like I said, they're really tasty. We do it every year. We always welcome people to our little get-together. If they haven't done it before, they want to see what's going on and what they need to do. They're welcome to stop by and say hello to us. And then we have the Division of Wildlife Resources will have a lot of nets over there. So if you don't have a special net for dipping Cisco, they're welcome to come over and borrow ours and just bring them back so other people can use them that day. And so it's a good thing to do and gets kids excited when they're out there and able to see all these fish. And so I'm trying to bring that next generation along, and that's what we're doing it for.
Yeah, I'm sure we just gross some people out with a description of how you just take scissors and chop the head off and then eat them, bones and all. But I've made several trips to China. I've kind of gotten used to eating the whole fish, the head, the tail, whatever, and just crunch through those bones. But it's not as bad as it sounds.
I have three questions, Scott.
Yeah.
Okay, the first of which is, what's the limit? Tell the people the limit on these.
Sure. Yeah, the limit is 30 fish per day. And so now Utah does not have a possession limit, so you can come out and catch 30 fish in one day. If you're so inclined and you want to eat those fish that night with your family, you can come back the next day and catch 30 more. And so a lot of people use them for bait, and some people just eat them fresh.
I've also heard pickled, but here's another question I have for you. Obviously, the bigger fish in the lake, i.e. the Mackinaw, Namakush, and, of course, the cut, they got to know that these guys are very vulnerable. They're near the surface and near the bank. Do you ever see them cruising around and chasing them, almost like tuna do for sardines?
Yeah. I don't typically see the fish, but they're in there definitely chasing them because the anglers that are fishing from shore casting either big Rapalas or kind of big spoons or anything that might look like a Cisco, they actually do quite well when they're fishing during the Cisco run or just prior to it, because you're right, the big lake trout and the big cutthroat trout are chasing those Cisco in. They're schooled up, they're concentrated, they've got their mind on spawning and not really avoiding predators at that time. And so, yeah, the predators take advantage of that.
Now that there's no ice, could you put a float tube out there and try that, throwing it into the schools?
Yes. Last year we had open water also. We had a pretty big group coming up from Cache Valley just about every day, and they were using fly rods out of float tubes over there, using big sculpin patterns or articulated rabbit fur flies, and doing quite well casting and catching cutthroat trout and lake trout. So.
This sounds really good. I haven't done this, but I think I may say my boys. I'm going to send them.
Yeah. You should have seen his eyes perk up when you said that there were people out there actually doing it last year. Almost like you do down at Lake Powell, throwing into the boils and looking for the strikers.
Absolutely.
Down there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. So this is coming up again on the 25th. You have to have a regular fishing license to pull this off, don't you?
Yep, that's all that's required, just a regular fishing license. And then, if your people are coming up, we got open water. You don't necessarily have to get in the water to dip these fish. You can stand on the shore. And I always tell people, if you're standing on shore, keep a low profile. Squat down, put your net in the water, and just don't make a lot of movement. And the fish will come right in over your net. All you have to do is lift the net. However, sometimes when you get some people out there, people are in the water splashing around, it helps if you have some chest waders or even a pair of hip boots. Standing in the water works pretty good, but I think it's more effective to stand on shore and let the fish come to you, because those fish are very sensitive. They can detect any kind of movement, and if you're standing in the water, if you're moving at all, they're going to swim right around you. And so I've seen people on shore dip netting fish, and people 20 or 30 yards down the shoreline standing there and saying, "Hey, I haven't seen anything." I go, "Well, try getting out of the water." And that's And that's usually the ticket. You know, people start catching fish then.
Yeah, Navi and I were talking last week how sad it is that some people have such a negative view of winter. And we said, you really need to find something that you enjoy doing with all the snow or the cold. And this is one of those things that you might try. You don't have to be a great fisherman, but it does sound like a lot of fun. And it might start a family tradition that gets you out there.
You know, Tim, there's no bad weather, just bad clothing.
I got it. Which makes me wonder how people stay warm in the Angel Flight pants.
Well, the disco
and
music
the silk shirt
warms you, yeah.
Where can people go to get more information on this, Scott?
Well, there is a whole Bear Lake Winterfest planned for that weekend up here in Bear Lake. And so it's Bear Lake Winterfest, Bear Lake Monster Winterfest.com. And so if they go to that website, they're able to pull up. You could read about the Cisco Disco. You could read about the Polar Plunge that's happening later on that afternoon where people are jumping in the water for charity. There's chili cook-offs up here. There's Taste of Bear Lake where there's several restaurants going to be, you know, serving up food. So there's more than to just the Cisco Disco. That kind of started it, and, boy, it's really blossomed in the last few years and taken off, and it gets people out, and it gives them a break in the middle of winter to do something fun.
Yeah, sounds like fun to me. Scott, great catching up with you. Thanks for all you do, and thanks for joining us on the show today.
I appreciate you. Thank you very much for having me on.
The Cisco Disco.
We got to do it, Tim.
Got to do it.
Yep.
We got to take a break. We'll do that when we come back. More of KSL Outdoors Radio coming up on Snow Day because of all the snow we've received and more of it last night. We will be checking in with Craig Gordon from the Avalanche Center, get you the safety information you need, and then find out from Emily Summers at Deer Valley what's waiting for you if you want to get up there and enjoy that resort. On the Icon Pass, by the way, 7 days or 5 days, depending on which one you happen to purchase before the season. Stay with us. Tim and Navi back here in just a minute.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, while we've got a minute here, and by the way, Snow Day coming up in a minute with Emily Summers from Deer Valley, and we'll also check in with Craig Gordon at the Avalanche Center. We really need to do that this week with all the snow that's fallen. A couple of things we didn't get a chance to do last hour on our News of the Week because we were talking with the Quagga Russell,
right,
making his way back home. Things that caught my eye this week on various news items. Watch this snowmobiler. This, by the way, is available on our KSL Outdoors Radio Facebook page. I'm not sure where this was. It was published by Snow West Magazine of a mishap on a snowmobile. This might be the reason why Navi's never done it.
Oh! Oh, man! I wish you would have prepared me for that.
Ow! He comes up over a side hill with...
Snowmobiling is more dangerous than skiing.
Sled skis in the air, and there just happens to be a pine tree to meet him on the other side. My understanding is he was okay, which is an amazing feat in and of itself when you see the video. How about this one? We were talking about all the snow that's come our way. You know, what was it, 6 feet in 6 days or something?
Oh, it's so good.
And Kevin Eubanks been calling them designer storms because we got 4 feet in the mountains at one point with only 4 inches in the valley. So you don't have to shovel it, but you can still go play in it.
That's what he calls it, designer, huh?
Yeah. And it also helps our snowpack, obviously. But Brighton Resort posted this one, and they said, what do you do when you have, what is that, an 85-inch base and 289-inch season so far? Slow motion, in full ski gear, taking flight and belly-flopping into the greatest snow on Earth. Boom. Look at that.
You know, you could die from that, Tim.
You could what?
Die from that.
Die like they never find you in the bottom of all of them?
You know, I have claustrophobia, and when I go down in the powder, I am really panicking, trying to get my mouth to air. I'm being very serious,
really?
And people have died in powder, by the way. A couple snowboarders did a couple years ago over in Nevada.
Hmm. And then this story out of Ohio. We've heard stories about how the deer decoys that they set up in the field to try and catch poachers, how it works on humans. It evidently works on deer, too. This is pretty funny stuff that's gone viral, where another small buck approached this this robotic deer standing in the decoy, standing in the middle of the field. Watch what happens.
He's like, hey, doll.
Yeah. So.
It comes up on her.
You see.
He's like, oh, slow, check it out.
Slowly approaches from the middle of the field, just being rather coy. Circles around in front. Gets within striking distance, and watch what happens.
Okay.
On full charge.
He's like, no, your horns aren't as big as mine. This is my turf. These are my girls. Boom.
Yeah. The buck comes up, says the other one hadn't moved. He decides to take it just broadside and does a little
hope head. They have insurance on that.
It does.
Animatronic deer that just got broken.
It does a headbutt on the decoy. And then takes off running like it's going to be traumatized for the rest of its life.
Oh, my gosh.
It will never attack another deer in its life, I'm telling you.
Hey, guys, I hit a competitor and I broke him.
Yeah. And then this story, we talked about it on Utah's Morning News this past week of the Utahn that was stranded up in the Alaskan wilderness.
Right, right.
His cabin burned down, and
right.
He was miles and miles away from nowhere, but he survived 23 days in the Alaska wilderness. 30 years old, Tyson Steele. Channel 5 did a story on it earlier in the week, and some of the pictures where he had carved out SOS in the snow to try and get attention should anybody come by when a rescue helicopter finally moved in to check on him. We just wanted to check in on how Channel 5 covered it this week. Lucky to be alive, for sure.
And she's live in Salt Lake tonight. Ashley, this must have been quite a reunion.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right, Deanie. In fact, the past few days have been a whirlwind for this man. He just got back into Salt Lake this past weekend. And, you know, he lost about 15 pounds in the whole ordeal. But in sitting down and talking to him, it's clear he gained a whole lot of perspective.
It looks like Christmas at the Steele home in North Salt Lake. And in a way, it feels like it, too.
I'm just so grateful. My heart is so full that he's here.
Her son Tyson is safe following 23 days stranded in Alaska, a place he called home for the past few years.
It's kind of in the blood.
He bought land and a cabin and grew to love the solace of the last frontier.
It was home and it was cozy.
The avid outdoorsman says he learned survival skills from his grandfather. Sometime on the night of December 17th, his cabin caught fire.
Bullets were going off. I had about 500 rounds of bullets, just propane tank that was shooting out 6-foot flames.
He lost his satellite phone in the blaze and his best friend of 8 years, a lab named Phil.
I think I was partially hysterical, too, with the loss of my dog. Like, logic went out the window.
As the blaze slowly went out, reality sunk in for the Utah native.
I knew no one was going to come for probably about 3 weeks.
He first built a snow cave.
That's one of the tricks I learned from my grandfather.
Then salvaged some tarps and wood and fashioned a shelter around an old stove that survived the fire. He rationed canned food found in the rubble.
Two cans a day was what it is, so I planned on breakfast and dinner.
He kept track of the time with a piece of chalk.
Yeah, it occurred to me that I could die and that people wouldn't know what had happened, so I had written a couple things down on the wood stove.
Some 3,000 miles away, his parents knew something was wrong.
Christmas time really did it for me. I'm like, this isn't normal.
That's when they called for help.
It still took 4 or 5 days before they could go out because it was so cold.
Three, you were partially 10 when I copied you arrived at the cabin.
On January 9th, a rescue chopper finally reached him. Now, back with family.
If you don't mind, I want to have a Christmas morning.
A delayed celebration and a gift that means more than ever before.
That is, what, 58 years old?
His grandfather's old jacket.
That's really that is cool. Beyond like anything I can be grateful for.
And amazingly, he had no major injuries, not even frostbite. Now, he told me one of the first things he wanted to do when he came back to Utah He wanted to go to Chuck-O-Rama. I'm not kidding. I get it, though. You know, all you can eat. He hasn't quite made it here yet, but it's on his to-do list once he gets a little more strength.
Boy, thanks to Ashley Kewish for sharing that story. Just fantastic stuff.
You know what they should have given him for Christmas is a puppy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That may
they
still
say,
be
he
coming.
Said that he ate pineapple when he was allergic to it. That's how hungry he was.
Yeah. Anyway, great story, and he can't wait to go back.
Yeah.
He's still going to go back to Alaska. We got to take a break. We're running a little long here. We'll come back when we do. It is the Snow Day segment. Emily Summers from Deer Valley.
Deer Valley, yep.
Yeah, and we'll talk avalanches as well. Get the latest report from the Utah Avalanche Center. Craig Gordon right around the corner.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.